So it's an interesting obsession that, and I think it's more of a male thing than of the fairer sex, this desire to keep building things that are bigger and better. It's this kind of fascination. Of course, you know, we tall people are exempt from such desires. But we were open the readings today with this famous quote, "Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanities." The preacher in Hebrew is Koheleth, and he is there in this most depressed state. You know, you don't read the book of Ecclesiastes if you're needing a bit of a lift, because he's really got it in for everything that's around him. Now, one of the characteristics of Hebrew, the language, is that it doesn't have a very large vocabulary. And so when it comes to this concept of vanity, there's no word in Hebrew that expresses vanity. And so without any kind of concepts like this, they have to find another word. And so hevel is the word that's here in the text. It simply means vapor or breath. And they don't tend to use the superlative form, you know, the greatest or the biggest of something. They just repeat a word if they want to emphasize it. So at the beginning of the Sanctus, we want to emphasize the holiness of God. So what do we say? Holy, holy, holy. So is this sense of repeating a word is the way of emphasizing it. So hebel of hebel, all is hebel. So vapor, breath, you know, what on earth, how could that mean this word vanity? Well, I guess it's that sense that, you know, when you breathe, or particularly when you go outside on a misty morning and you see the little wisps of mist floating around the edge of the valley, and you know that as soon as the sun comes, that it's going to burn away all of that mist. It's just simply passing. The rabbis also comment on this particular word, hebel, that it's the same letters in Hebrew as the word, the name Abel, Abel and Cain. And of course, Abel's, the whole of his life is described in just a few passing verses, that his life was cut way too short. It's that sense of life that is too fleeting. A better way, perhaps, of understanding is this concept of absurdity, that so often in our lives, things are indeed deeply absurd. You know, there's no real purpose or sense to them. This was expressed quite powerfully in this 1930 painting by Grant Wood. It's called American Gothic, and it features this two depressed and sad-looking couple. It's based in his home region of Iowa. And he said that the inspiration was actually the farmhouse in the background of painting. And he was struck by the detail of the window. And he said it was just too beautiful for this very ordinary and very boring kind of building. And it kind of represented for him this sense of wanting to be better and greater than things actually were. And the two farmers there, the male model was his dentist, the female model was his sister. And it went on to capture something of the heart and the psyche of America at that time, in the beginning of the Great Depression and all of the events that surrounded that. What is perhaps more famous about the painting is the parodies that have been done by it, because people reacted so strongly against it. In fact, Wood received a whole manner of death threats from fellow Iowans who were so enraged that he would dare to represent their kind looking so dour and so sad and so depressed. And yet so many commentators have said, well, he's really striking at the heart of that whole Western ideal, that sense that we've got it all together and yet we still haven't attained this happiness. And so, you know, you'll get these kind of variations on this image. And of course, you get the Lego version, and there are versions with Michelle and Obama and all kinds of things. But the sense of that so often what we strive to attain is utterly absurd. It is just this mere passing of things, and yet we still have this obsession. And so we come to the gospel today and this question that this man puts to Jesus. Tell my brother, Rabbi, to give me my share of the inheritance. You know, how many times do people, do families fight over those shares of an inheritance? It's this terrible indictment of our world. You know, you sometimes hear stories about people who, you know, in the weeks before they're about to die, that they change their will to make sure that no one is going to be happy, that they will annoy the most number of people possible, so that there at their funeral, everyone will be fighting and squabbling and all of this. And you just think, really? Is that what life is about? For a start, though, this question is just entirely inappropriate for a rabbi, for Jesus to be answering. It wasn't the role of a rabbi to be fighting these kinds of disputes, to be mediating or to be arbitrating between these two claims. It was all set out fairly clearly in the law, in the Torah, as to what should be the case. And so this man was just grasping at straws in putting it. But Jesus obviously recognized this as an opportunity to come to this deeper question. And so he then begins to tell this parable about this barn. And then we have the central character in the parable. And he's there saying to himself, you know, he's had this good bounty, this good and blessed harvest. Oh my soul, what shall I do? And it's a question that we don't even kind of blink at today, because we're used to having these kind of inner dialogues with ourselves. But at that time, it was really unheard of. And across most of the history of the world, indeed, it was unheard of for a question like this to be something that you would just think about yourself. That these questions you would talk about with your friends. That in the evening after you've come back from laboring all day long, you would sit around a meal or you'd sit around having a drink and just sharing life together. And people would resolve these kinds of questions in community, because it was always at the heart of community that these questions would be found. And so you would use the support of the community to come to a decision. So this is this, you know, the people at the time hearing this story would have gone, Jesus, this is a really weird kind of story. Who would come to that conclusion? Who would sit there by themselves with this continuing refrain of, oh my soul? Four times we hear this man locked in this dialogue where it's just himself. You know, he's cut off from the rest of the community, so isolated, so caught up in his own wealth, in his own power, in his own desire to set himself right. And it's this bizarre situation of what we in the West have taken on. This situation at that time that would have just been as great a parody as Miss Piggy. This whole sense that these people are caught up in this situation that we just now take as the norm. We just presume and expect that this is the way that we should live our lives, even though it is utterly absurd, utterly vain to be caught up in such trivialities. What lies at the heart of this is this reflection on anxiety. This man comes with this great anxiety to Jesus. The parable features this man who is so anxious. What shall I do? You know, my barns aren't big enough. I need bigger barns in order to be able to store all that I have. We live in this world that presumes that things are meant to be anxious. You know, we set targets. It's all about shareholder returns. It's all about looking after the interests of all of the various stakeholders. You know, and if you meet your targets as an employee, then your target will just be increased. If you don't meet your target, then you feel like you're a failure. This whole sense of this continuing drive based on anxiety. And what lies behind that is this question, you know, is the world indeed filled with things that are scarce, or is there an abundance? Is there enough for everyone to go around? And of course, the answer is yes. The world has enough food. The world has enough resources, but we need to learn to share. We need to learn to know what our limits are, that we can't take more than our fair share, but there is abundance. It's not about scarcity, and especially in relationship to God. That with God, there's always enough love, always enough grace, always enough forgiveness, always enough mercy. Everything that we need, everything that we truly need, is available to us from God. And we need to live in that present moment, not caught up with anxiety, not overwhelmed by so many other things, but learning simply to be in that present moment, to learn those lessons of prayer that we've been looking at the last few weeks, to allow God the space and the room simply to be in His presence and to get off this treadmill of anxiety and scarcity.